that did in the dinosaurs.
And I think we can thank Thomas Jagger for his contribution, because he took a phenomenon, volcanoes, that was just a spectacle, and he turned that into a science.
We want to give Magma Animus thanks to the hot talents who helped produce this show, Gary Niederhoff and Barbara Vance.
Also, thanks to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, a nonprofit scientific and education organization whose scientists study the origin and nature of life. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to the episode Caught in a Traps. If you'd like to hear more Big Picture Science, well, you'll find it in our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener but prefer listening to over-the-air radio because it was once the hot new thing, or simply because your radio sits next to your lava lamp, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
And if you listen to our show via iTunes, we invite you to leave a review on our iTunes page.
And to reach us directly with your comments, be sure to throw in some faint praise, and then email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
They sounded like stomping on the ground. It wasn't that loud, but it was from the plant eaters. Like, they would stomp pretty loud. The more smaller it is, the more it doesn't stomp.
This is Pack 1054 from Allen Park. You're listening to WHFR Dearborn.
Welcome to WHFR Dearborn, the only station making waves. And it is time for Impact, and we are waiting for our guests to come in still. So to kind of get you in the mood, we are waiting for Kim Solarski from the Arab American National Museum. And I found some really wonderful Arabic music I was going to play anyway, so we'll have a little listen to the Sultans of Swing. Thank you. We are live. Welcome to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. Hi, I'm your host Lynn, and today we're discussing the Arab American National Museum with the museum's communication manager. And we're talking to Kim Solarski. Welcome, Kim. Thank you so much for being part of Impact.
Hello and good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
This is, I often have interesting subjects, and they're always interesting subjects.
I'm sure they are.
And I always think, this is interesting, can we do an hour? Is there an hour worth of content? You are totally on the opposite spectrum. I'm hoping we can fit in everything we want to fit in today. We'll be talking about the Arab American National Museum, and there's just so much to talk about there. But before we talk about that, let's talk about you. Tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I'm a native Detroiter, born and raised, and I've been working in the arts for most of my career, and I started out professionally as the morning anchor and assistant news director at WDET-FM, the Detroit National Public Radio affiliate. Mm-hmm. As I like to say, in an earlier millennium, that was an earlier life I had. But when I left DET, I was always inclined toward arts and history and culture and music, just personally. And so, whether it was as a freelance writer for the Free Press and the News and the Metro Times, or working in publications at Detroit Symphony, or ArtServe Michigan, I've worked in a number of nonprofit arts positions, and it seems to be where my heart is. And about 10 years ago, I was recruited by a founder of Access and the Arab American National Museum, Ishmael Ahmed, mm-hmm. to become the communications person at their brand new museum, and I've been there ever since.
Oh, wonderful. Ish is definitely a friend of WHFR. So
he sure is.
Yes, he is. Great guy, too. But we digress. When I was preparing and taking a look at the webpage for the museum, I've been there before. I've been there for different reasons. I've been there just as a guest touring, and I've been there for food, very good food. And I was actually there for a wedding a few years ago.
Lovely.
And it was absolutely gorgeous. We had the imitation candlelight, but we had candlelight throughout the museum, which gave it a beautiful glow, and the food was spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
And with the second floor sort of balcony, if you
the
will.
Atrium area.
The atrium area, mm-hmm. which you can see everything. The band was downstairs. It was just a phenomenal experience. Everything was beautiful. So it just absolutely enhanced the beauty of that that space.
That's great. We do event rentals. We have a number of spaces. So I'm glad you had a good time. It sounds like you did.
everything was beautiful. And, you know, I'm all about the visual and the food. And it was just a really, really good day. Some of the programs that extend the museum into the community, definitely want to talk about that. But first, let's talk about what do we have in the way of exhibits when we talk about permanent exhibits, and then we have traveling exhibits, just like any other museum. DIA does that sort of thing.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. The museum has a series of permanent galleries. Then the first floor, we call it the community courtyard, and it's basically a series of cases that that illustrate from many, many centuries back into history the contributions to the world that have come out of what we now call the Arab world, that part of the world. Okay. Those things include algebra, anesthesiology, all kinds of interesting things that are meant to be sort of a precursor of what you're going to see on the second floor, which are the three permanent exhibits. And we are not an Arab museum, we are an Arab American museum. And so when our founders, about 11 years ago now, were creating the museum, they traveled the country and they collected individual stories from Arab Americans from all of the 22 nations in the Arab world, different walks of life, different professions, different economic levels. And they made the museum out of these stories and the artifacts that these individuals donated. So it's a very personal kind of institution. It's not told in an academic sense. It's told, we interpret through personal stories and personal experiences. One, as you go through the museum, when I first went through before I worked there, long before I worked there, my feeling was this is the immigrant story. This is my grandmother coming from Poland through Ellis Island. The names are different. The food has a little different names, but the experience is pretty much the same. And so the museum has this dual identity of being a cultural home for anybody of Arab American of Arab descent who is an American and who identifies with that part of their personality. Not everybody does, but for those who do, we are the national cultural repository and the place where history is cared for and true stories are told. And for everybody else, we are a source of accurate information. There's a lot of stereotypes out there perpetrated by individuals, by media, on social media, things fly around. So we are also here as a resource for individuals, news media, educational institutions, anybody who's looking for the real story about Arab Americans, who they are, what they brought to this country, and how they continue to contribute today.
Mm-hmm. Ish came to speak at my church a number of years ago, a long time ago, and he was a guest in our service, and then we went to the fellowship hall for his presentation after that. And the first question he asked was, where am I from, or where do you think I'm from? And so we had all kinds of Arabic countries getting spewed out. He said, I'm from Chicago. So Arab Americans are definitely a strong part of the culture.
They really are. I mean, there's no line on the census form for Arabs or Arab Americans. And it's something that the community is working with the Census Bureau on so we can get an accurate count of what the population really is. In Dearborn, we know between a third and a half of the population is of Arab descent, and that's been growing significantly in the last few decades as more immigrants have come and joined the ones that were already here. Mm-hmm. But nationally, it's kind of harder to know what the picture really is. Some people say 3 million, some people say 5 million. We'd love to know the exact number.
Interesting.
It sure would be. It sure would be. But there is no other museum anywhere else in the country or even in the world that represents and tells the stories of Arab Americans. Paris has a beautiful Arab World Museum. It's not the Arab American Museum. You know, we are still the only one after 11 years. We're really proud of that.
Okay. I noticed on the page that there's an affiliation with the Smithsonian.
Yeah, actually, we have a couple of important affiliations that we like to talk about. The first one is with the Smithsonian Institution, and that's for folks who don't know or have just heard that name and don't really understand what it is, the Smithsonian is our national set of museums. They reside mostly in Washington, D.C., but there are a couple that are outside. And this is our national heritage, just like the Arab American Museum is the heritage and the lives of Arab Americans. The Smithsonian represents the entirety of science and art and history in a series of institutions. So when we first opened up, knowing that we were unique and had a slice of American history to tell that no one else was telling, we applied to the Smithsonian Affiliates Program. And this is this allows the Smithsonian to take itself out of Washington, D.C. and be in people's neighborhoods across the country, because not everyone can come to Washington. So by being an affiliate, we get the mark of the Smithsonian. They've given us their brand, their mark of excellence. They've said, we endorse what you're doing. You're telling a unique part of the American story. The other thing we get is access to training, artifacts. There's one artifact that the Smithsonian recently put on display, and it's much less impressive than it was on teenage boys' bedroom walls back in the 1970s, and it was Farrah Fawcett's red bathing suit from the famous poster, and that was designed by Norma Kamali, who is an Arab American. I would love to have that bathing suit in my building, but when it's just on a mannequin or on display, it doesn't look anywhere near as good as it did when Farrah Fawcett wore it. So the Smithsonian affiliation gives us that imprimatur, mm-hmm. of the Smithsonian, and allows us to take part in a lot of programs that they put on nationally. They do a lot of youth education programs where they'll convene a panel in Washington, D.C. at one of their institutions on a subject such as the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer. This year we just did a program on the internment of Japanese during World War II. So they do a national program, and then they stream it out to sites across the country, and our museum is often one of those sites. So we're assembling local people to take part in these national programs, being an extension of the Smithsonian for their part, and for our part, getting the imprimatur of the Smithsonian and having that prestige. The other one we like to talk about is our accreditation, which is something that you have to work long and hard for and pay money for a little bit. The American Alliance of Museums is sort of our trade association for the museum industry in this country. And they have an accreditation program, and only a small percentage of American museums go through the very rigorous process of accreditation. It's multiple years. It's amazing documentation. You have to meet standards of museum operation and excellence. And we were able to do that within a few years of our opening, which is wow. Pretty amazing. And so I like to describe that as the good housekeeping seal of approval from the museum industry. Okay. We're doing it right. We're doing it the way the best practices, demand. And so we're very proud of that as well, because we're very small staff, small budget, small building. So to reach Smithsonian affiliation and accreditation are two pretty important marks.
Yeah. Is there a certain size that a museum is required to be, whether it's, I'm not sure, whether it's square footage or whether you're talking about number of employees or number of dollars that you raise each year, that kind of thing. Is there something size-wise that helps you with the accreditation?
No, neither. No. It really has everything to do with the unique, with Smithsonian, it has everything to do with the unique slice of American history that we're telling.
Okay.
With the accreditation, it's our ability to meet standards. There's no size standard.
Okay.
But if you can meet standards of best practices of museums, including monitoring your temperature and humidity, having proper storage, having proper bylaws, I mean, everything from A to Z that a good business, any kind of business, mm-hmm. Requires to succeed is part of the application for that accreditation. Mm-hmm. So it took the whole museum staff a few years to make that application. And luckily, then we had some site visits from experts who came and evaluated us. Mm-hmm. And then finally earned our accreditation.
Oh, that's very interesting. Because you go to a little town and you see this house-sized museum for the history of the village,
mm-hmm.
and yet you can go to Chicago, you can go to Washington and find these huge entities.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Okay.
The Smithsonian really looks for someone who's telling a unique story, and there's just a handful of affiliates in Michigan. One of them is the Air Zoo in Kalamazoo,
yes,
which is affiliated with the science and industry part of the Smithsonian. Mm-hmm. So they look for museums across the country that are telling a unique piece of something American.
Okay.
And those are the folks that they draw into their affiliation network.
Okay. And then there was a third one, the International Coalition of Sites of Conscience.
Yes, this is an international agency, and I wouldn't say there's a lot of feet on the ground work done by this coalition, but what it is, it's a set of cultural institutions that all focus on a certain set of social issues or values. And we are part of a subset of the Sites of Conscience, which has to do with immigration. So there's a museum in New York, for example, called the Tenement Museum. They are part of that because it has to do with immigrations and how immigrants lived when they first came to America.
Sure.
So this is a group of museums that all work on similar themes, and they communicate and they share best practices. So it's not something physical that people would see when they walk in the museum, but it's a mark of our level, of the level of respect and our reputation out there in the world that we were invited to join.
Okay.
So it's a good thing.
If people listening have not been there, do go. It is absolutely beautiful. It's just gorgeous. I don't know how else to describe it.
Thank you so
From
much.
The brass handrails going down to the basement, which are always shiny.
I'll tell the cleaning crew you said so.
So that's part of the presentation you
well,
were talking
it sure
about
is.
For, the,
it sure
for
is.
The accreditation.
The you know, maintenance of the building is banal, but if your floors aren't cleaned, if your bathrooms aren't clean, people don't want to visit. You know, it's very boring,
yeah.
And your content is the most important, the stories you have to tell. But if you don't have those basic amenities, I don't think you're doing a very good job of customer service.
Right. Okay, then, I had mentioned earlier that it's almost like tentacles. There's so many outreach things happening. So you have all kinds of things going on with regards to need for volunteers. There's an e-newsletter. There are educational programs. There's a library, which I didn't know until I started doing the research here. And there's even summer camp. So any of those, all of those that you'd like to talk to us about?
Sure. Well, it's important to know that that we have permanent exhibits, but we also have three rotating gallery spaces. So there's always something new to see, even if you have already been. And as you mentioned, the building itself is almost an exhibit of its own.
Mm-hmm.
The architecture of the building, including the dome and the tile work that you see in the first floor, are all very reminiscent elements, architectural elements found in Arab world nations and tradition, architectural traditions that go back many centuries and millennia. So it's a pretty place to come to work, that's for sure. No doubt about that. But we have three, you know, the permanent exhibits, and we have these three temporary spaces where we will create shows ourselves, curate and originate ourselves, or people will have a show that's touring, or they want to make a show, so they propose a show. And right now those spaces are focused on two shows. We're having our first show that's in both our main floor gallery and our lower level gallery, the same show taking two galleries. Never happened before. And that's a show that it's called What We Carried. And it's a photo show. The photographer is not Arab, but what he's done, his name is Jim Lomason. He's interviewed Iraqi and Syrian immigrants and refugees. From wherever they've come to America. And he's interviewed them, but then he's photographed an artifact or an item that they brought with them when they left. And so thus the title, What We Carried, and the subtitle is Fragments from the Cradle of Civilization. And so what you see in both those galleries are a series of photographic images which have captions on them. They're all bilingual, so everybody can access, you know, the content, the stories behind why someone brought this copy of the Quran, or why they brought their funny rubber shower sandals, or why they brought that Barbie doll, or that quilt made of ties. And, you know, and so Dearborn is also represented in this show. It's the stories are drawn from immigrants from all across the country, but Dearborn, everywhere he goes, he adds the local people. So that's in two of our galleries right now for several months. That's going to be up through October 23rd. Then we have a small show on our second floor atrium by a photographer who's local. He's an Iraqi immigrant himself. His name is Salwan Georges, and he was an intern at the Detroit Free Press as a photographer and is now on staff. And published a series of amazing images of refugees acclimating in their new surroundings in America. So on the postcard for that exhibit, which is called Starting Over in Dearborn, you see an image of these fish, these huge fish being fried in racks, and they're vertical racks, and there's a little boy tending the fire, and it looks ancient. The technique looks ancient, like you've been doing fish this way for tens of thousands of years, but the setting is American. This is how people are trying to preserve their culture after they've left their homeland. You know, they're going to try to maintain some of their food traditions or some of their faith-based practices or whatever grandma's favorite dish, you know, whatever it is. You don't assimilate completely. There's always that part of you. And even when you're second and third and fourth and fifth generation, just depending on who you are as an individual, you might still be carrying that within you. So it's a really interesting show by someone who's a young emerging photographer from our area who's very, very, very talented. In addition, we have touring shows, and we're so excited because right now we have a show that we originated several years ago that was about the neighborhood in Lower Manhattan that was the landing spot for Arab immigrants in the late 1800s and early 1900s, and it was called Little Syria, because back then the nations that we now know as Lebanon and Syria were all called Greater Syria. So this was Little Syria, New York. And we opened this at the museum several years ago, took it to New York just for about a month, but to a venue that was in the footprint of where this neighborhood was. There's very little left of it now. So we do have, right now we have a tour going, though. We have three venues. It's in New York through March 24th of 2017. And the most exciting thing is that from October 1st of this year to January 9th of next year, it's going to be at the Ellis Island National Museum of Immigration. And that, you've seen the photo of that place. You know, everybody knows that building. It's not the Statue of Liberty. It's the other island that you would go to and visit in New York Harbor if you were visiting New York City. And that's the actual island and the actual building where so many hundreds of thousands of immigrants, including Arab immigrants, came through. So that's more people will see that show at Ellis Island than have visited our museum in 10 years.
Wow.
We're really, really excited. We do exhibits in Los Angeles, Washington, D.C. We've done them in Jacksonville, Florida, Houston, cities where there are active and organized Arab American populations that can help us host these shows. So we've been touring almost since the beginning, touring exhibitions.
Wow. Some of the educational things you're doing, excuse me, obviously this exhibit qualifies as educational, mm-hmm. but you have actual summer camps, and there's a library at the museum, so those types of educational things. You want to talk about those?
Sure. I mean, we pretty much exist to educate, to preserve history and then to share it, and we do that in a number of different ways. We have a very popular offering that we call cultural competency training. And basically this can be for any group of people. It can be for policemen, people working in hospitals, anybody who's encountering Arab populations who is interested or needs to know to be a better business person, what the customs are. And just to get the little bit of background information that you might need to be a better provider of services, for example, to an Arab patient in a hospital or something like that. So cultural competency is something that we've been doing since the beginning. And it is a group activity, and it's usually hired out. You know, we customize it to the entity that's asking for it. But for individuals, there's lots of fun things to do, including just visiting the museum, reading all the stuff on the walls and interacting with the exhibits. But we have both Arabic music lessons that are offered on an ongoing basis at the museum, as well as Arabic language lessons. And these were things that the community was clamoring for. These are fairly recent additions to our program lineup, the music and language lessons. But we were hearing that there was a demand out there. And so trying to be responsive, trying to be community-based, we do that. For children, for many, many years, we've had this program that actually predates the museum. It was founded by our parent corporation, Access, and it's called Sura Arts Academy. And Sura is an Arabic word for photo. So it's a summer photo camp for kids age 10 through 15. And the notion is that you can use a camera not only to learn how to take a decent photo, to compose, you know, to edit, to present your work. You can use that camera as a way to see new and different things in your community and outside of your community. And so this is the summer camps run. There's two of them, one in June, one in July. They're just 5 days, but they're all day, 5 days. Field trips, lectures, cameras provided. And then every fall we do an exhibition of kids' work. So it's not, you're not just taking photos for yourself. You're going to see your photo on the wall in a national museum with Smithsonian accreditation or affiliation and American Alliance of Museum accreditation. So it's a real thrill for a student artist and, you know, even those who are not really interested in a career, you know, in photography or a creative career, to see their own work on the wall of a museum is pretty thrilling.
Yes,
so
it is.
We're excited about that. So we are accepting registrations for that right now.
Okay.
All the information is on our website at arabamericanmuseum.org.
Okay. Phenomenal. What about volunteers?
We could not run our museum without volunteers. We are always actively recruiting, and some of our best docents who give the group tours have started out as volunteers and then come up and become not paid staff members, but paid docents, you know, people who we call in. And volunteers can do all different kinds of fun things, from sort of ushering at a concert or a film festival to stuffing bags for a VIP reception. It really is, we try to recruit volunteers and find what they want to do, what skill they want to lend or offer or bring, and then find a task that will light them up and turn them on and make it a worthwhile experience. So we're constantly recruiting for volunteers.
Okay. And how do I volunteer?
You can call us at 582-2266 and ask for my colleague Dave. Dave is the volunteer king at my museum, and he would be the one who would be happy to meet with you. There's always an interview. We want to see you, meet with you, talk with you, see what you're thinking, how much time you want to commit, what skills you want to bring. Maybe you want to learn something new. Maybe you want to train to be a docent yourself. You don't have to be of Arab descent to be a volunteer or a docent if you want. We provide all the training, and people seem to have a lot of fun. We have very young docents, teenagers, or volunteers, teenagers. We have retired seniors who are volunteers and docents. So it's an amazing group of people, and we couldn't run our museum without them.
Wow. How many do you have approximately?
Oh, gosh. It really waxes and wanes just based on the school year, because sometimes we get college students volunteering or being docents. So there's probably a core group of 50 or 60 people that we see regularly, and then people come in and out. Maybe they have an internship or a service or something they need to fulfill a requirement for. They might be asked for a class, you know, to come to our museum and do some work. So it waxes and wanes a little bit, but there's always room for more. Always.
Well, there's a volunteer page on the website, and just a number of different things you can do, which you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
It's an amazing opportunity, and you could potentially go from one thing to another, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We've had volunteers do work that supports our store. That can be fun. You might be pricing merchandise or helping take inventory. The library always has work going on. You mentioned that weren't aware of our library, and actually our library is called the Russell J. Abaid Library and Resource Center, after our patron Russell Abaid, who is the former head of Guardian Glass in Auburn Hills. And the library is the single largest collection of research materials about Arab Americans anywhere in the country. So we have students, researchers, other people, academics who are coming to us because of this. We even have a travel grant to help them come and do their work here at our library. We hold a number of different collections. One of them is a collection of romance novels with Orientalist themes. And I'm sure you've seen those at the used bookstore, or maybe even on your own bookshelf. Those are very popular. We have a collection of those. Jeff Johns, who's the creative director for DC Comics in Los Angeles, is actually from Michigan. He visited us and did some programs and gave us a whole set of comic books. So we have the Jeff Johns comic book collection now. We have a cookbook collection. This is one of our most popular collections, is the
Certainly.
Cookbook collection.
It's always all about the food.
But it really is a wonderful resource. And even just to browse, just to look at the shelves and see all of the fiction and nonfiction written by and about Arab Americans, plus the academic research materials, it's pretty incredible.
Wow. You mentioned before about some of the music programs.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to the theater before, mm-hmm. and the acoustics are incredible.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoy them. That's the Global Fridays World Music Concert Series, and it's been there since the beginning of the museum, and it's really a sister series to Concert of Colors, which I know we're going to be talking about mm-hmm. in a minute. So once a month, in the auditorium, we will bring in an artist. People think Arab Museum, it's going to be all Arab artists. No, this is not the theme. Global Fridays is really meant to showcase all kinds of communities of color, of not color, through their musical traditions. You know, we've had gypsies, we've had Eastern Europeans, we've had Asians, we've had Latino and Latina artists. I mean, just a wide variety. Right. On that series, and that's the point of it. Sometimes people have a hard time getting their mind around that. Why aren't you doing only Arabic music? We do present Arabic music on that series and at other times, but we really believe that that there are so many parallels between communities and so many common experiences. And if we could do more to enjoy each other through traditions like food and music and focus less on our differences,
yeah,
maybe we could make a little difference. We could push the needle a little bit in the right direction.
That's a cool concept piece.
or just respect. We'd go for respect. That
or
would be
just
good.
Dinner. the design and the acoustics are incredible, and I forgot the seating capacity. It's not a huge theater.
It's 156, and it was designed specifically for live music by people who were experts. Mm-hmm. We've tried to do some music in our. We have an expansion space, approximately 4,000-foot expansion space, but it's concrete brick walls, and it was meant to be a multi-purpose space, and it sounds like one.
Oh.
So that experiment did not last long, and those concerts were moved right back into that auditorium where they will be staying.
Where
and in fact, even our recent film festival, we were part of the big Cinetopia Film Festival that just took place.
Yes,
our films were also. Presented in that auditorium, and the sound and the projection, we rented special equipment to make sure that those films were shown at the level of quality that they should be.
Right, so. Yeah. That's always a really exciting annual tradition, too, the Cinetopia.
Yeah.
But we're not going to go into that because we don't have enough time.
Yes.
One thing that's so obvious, and I didn't mention, didn't ask the question, is, and you had mentioned about the tiles on the main floor and that sort of thing. The building itself is something to see, just without even thinking about the exhibits, the building itself. So with regards to the tiling and some of the other design niches, if you will, of the building itself, I'm not going to ask if there were experts. There were experts, but where did the experts come from to help with the design and to make the design?
Well, to build the building, our neighbor and I'm sure our patron in many areas of Dearborn and throughout Michigan, Yusuf Ghaffari and his firm designed that building.
Mm-hmm.
So Mr. Ghaffari, being of Arab descent, had, you know, intimate familiarity with architectural elements of the Arab world. And so, for example, the Moroccan tile work, I can't tell you the name of the artist who did the Moroccan tile work or made the designs or who installed them, but I can tell you that that Mr. Ghaffari knows. And those were put there you know, specifically because they represented a tradition, a specific tradition of artwork in tile in Morocco. In our dome, on the from the outside, you just see a white dome that's reminiscent of many mosques. Dome, very common element architecturally, not just faith-based, but architecturally in the Arab world. On the inside of the dome, if you come inside the building, you see that the dome is all decorated with calligraphy. And calligraphy is another art form that is very prominent and very historic in the Arab world. And so our dome on the inside is decorated with our name in Arabic, in calligraphy, repeated a number of times. And when you take a tour, they always point you up and they say, look at the dome. You know, there's a section in the courtyard that has sort of an blue and white abstract tile that lines the atrium. You, when you're looking at the atrium, the second floor from the first floor, you see these beautiful blue and white tiles. In Islamic design tradition, figurative, you know, representations of humans, for example, not really part of the tradition. So you see things like flowers, or you see abstract designs, or you see repetitive graphic designs that almost look modern, contemporary 20th or 21st century, but they actually Islamic patterns, you know, inspired by artists who couldn't use figural representations in their work of people, so created a new design tradition. So you're going to see that on the wall as well. You'll see arches, peaked arches. You'll see what you might think is a Star of David, but it isn't. It has a different number of points than the Star of David.
Okay.
So there are all these visual cues that are hearkening back to the Arab world and to the Islamic architectural tradition and just general Arab architecture traditions.
Mm-hmm. Wow. There's so much there.
You can get lost. You can wander around in there for a little while.
For a long while.
Yeah.
What are the options for somebody who's interested in being part of? So are there memberships, or do you just come on a one-time basis?
People should feel to engage at whatever level they want.
Okay.
I would encourage everybody to at least come and visit once. This is a one-of-a-kind thing in our nation. And if you're listening to us right now, you are within a very short driving distance of this one-of-a-kind institution. So I think it's worth your time to visit it even once. And folks, if you're Arab, you will fall in love. You may shed tears. I've seen this happen many times, and it you know, makes you feel like you're doing a really good job. Sometimes I think that the people who need this museum most are the people who are least likely to want to come voluntarily. I would challenge you, not to a fight, but to come and just see the stories we have, see what we have to say, talk to our staff, talk to a docent or a staff member. Come on. We'd love to have you. You know, we really, really, really would. And in terms of membership, yes, if you find that you want to maintain a stronger connection to the institution, you can take out a membership. They start at $35. Discounts on tickets, discounts in the museum store, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I want to spend the day there, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately how many hours, if it's my first time visiting and I don't want to spend forever, but I want to come out of the place with a reasonable idea of what I've seen, what I've learned.
90 minutes. I mean, you can do something shorter, but I don't think you're really going to get a sense. I mean, it probably most important to visit the permanent exhibits for a first-time visitor. So that could save you some time right there, not to go into the traveling exhibits, but I would hesitate to tell you not to do a traveling exhibit because they're often really compelling and fresh and topical, you know, especially in an issue like immigration, which is such a football these days, and certainly leading up to the election. Having an immigration-themed exhibition in our building during an election year, we feel is really powerful and something that we can do to contribute to the civil discourse that's going on.
Yep. Okay, first of all, I'm going to remind the listeners that you are listening to IMPACT, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. And it is so exciting to have Kim Solarski in the studio with me today and talking about the Arab American Museum. As you said, one of a kind throughout the country. And we have just a few minutes left, but definitely want to talk about one of my favorite projects. That's one of your favorite projects, I'm sure. And that's Concert of Colors, coming up very quickly. We're about a month away.
Today is a month away. Tell me how much time we have, Lynn, because I don't want to go too crazy on you. I have to start by saying, though, that this radio station, WHFR, has been a stalwart supporter making this festival happen for so many years. It predates my tenure at the museum, and I have to just say thank you to WHFR for its support of the festival and for the fact that you've come out and done a live broadcast from the diversity stage for 2 days of every festival for I don't know how many years, and it's seamless. We never have to do anything to make it happen. You show up, you're professional, you do it, you help these artists reach audiences who can't make it down. It is so incredibly important. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that contribution to the festival.
Thank you, because we enjoy being there for those 2 days.
Well, there's fewer and fewer radio stations who appreciate this kind of music these days. So the fact that you're here and appreciative is very important to us. It's the 24th annual festival. Not many festivals make it that long in this town. It is free. It's still free. We like to point that out. July 14 through 17 at a number of venues. Only a small part of it takes place here at the museum in Dearborn. We do a talking part, a forum on community, culture, and race that takes place on Thursday the 14th at the museum, also free. The music is the 15th through the 17th, and that takes place in Midtown at the Detroit Institute of Arts, the Charles Wright Museum of African American History, the Max M. and Marjorie S. Fisher Music Center, the Scarab Club, pretty much Midtown Takeover for those 3 days, and a number of amazing world music elders are on the bill, including King Sunny Ade and his African Beats, the Eddie Palmieri Salsa Orchestra, the Mighty Sparrow, and then we have this amazing group of women on the bill this year that are an amazing story by themselves. The woman on the poster is Kiran Awuhalia, and she's sort of an Indian Arab mix that incorporates ancient poetry. I can't wait to see that. Astrid Haddad is a Mexican cabaret artist whose act is very costume based. If you watch her video on YouTube, you might find you want to check her out. That's one that I'm looking forward to. Yuna is an artist from Malaysia who does pop music. So an Ajabi doing pop on our stage. Gotta love that. And then all kinds of local bands will be on the outdoor stage. The Don Was Review for the 9th year. We hooked up with the Free Press to showcase. The Free Press did a contest for Detroit's 100 Greatest Songs. Had their readers vote, and the top 10 songs will be announced at that review that night. They will not be published in the newspaper or online anywhere else until they are played. So we're really excited. And Don is very kind. We could never pay him what he deserves and what he needs to put on that review, and yet he's come back for the 9th year, and I'm sure he'll be back for a 10th. So we're really excited about everybody on the bill, including the headliners. And we're very grateful to our sponsors. Ford Foundation is our presenting sponsor. And as I said, HFR among many media sponsors and other sponsors. And it's really a festival for our community. We're happy to put it on, and it's free. So please come.
And some of the street vendors, I generally have at least one new outfit per year from Parsons Street, and I'll have compliments throughout the year. I found it on the street.
We have there's vendors indoors and outdoors. Right. And outdoors this year, we're adding a beer garden, barbecue, and we're going to be having the carnival games from Theater Bazaar. If you're a Theater Bazaar fan, we're going to have a little slice of the fun that usually takes place around in the fall in Detroit when they put on a much bigger thing at Masonic
Okay.
But we're going to have a little taste of their carnival games at our event.
And food trucks?
Food trucks, always. Food trucks, must have food trucks.
So there's food inside and outside.
Indeed.
If we could go back, we just have a couple minutes mm-hmm. left, but if we could go back to the first day, the July 14th,
yeah.
Which is in your house.
Yes,
that's
it is.
That's at your place.
It is.
I don't know what this is. It's a forum, and mm-hmm. The artists speak. It's a Water is Life.
Right, right. Typically, this forum is planned by a group of young people, and this year, because of all of the issues around Flint and water becoming an issue across the country, infrastructure, pipes, things like that, the young people organizing the forum this year felt that water had to be the topic. And
sure.
Because it's part of a music festival and it deals with culture, and community and race, what it will be is a series of performances and presentations by artists addressing issues related to water and what's
wow.
been going on in Flint and the awareness now that's been generated across the country of this issue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a free event. It requires an RSVP, though, because
okay.
there is limited seating for that because it's at the museum. At the festival venues, there's much more availability.
Right,
so
right.
you do have to RSVP for that, and you can do that on the Concert of Colors website.
Sounds absolutely fantastic.
They're usually pretty well attended.
Yeah, everything sounds. Another thing that kind of escaped my brain, because it's usually, okay, I have to be there on that day, and that's it. But definitely seems like something we should take in and listen. Again, more education from mm-hmm. the museum,
mm-hmm.
more learning from the museum.
In a cultural way, you know, I mean,
yes.
it's not like academic or lecture-y. Everything we do, if we're going to talk about a current event or deal with a topic, it's going to be in a cultural sort of way. It's
mm-hmm.
not going to be in a academic kind
mm-hmm.
of way.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed that we have the outdoor music, indoor music, outdoor food, indoor food.
Mm-hmm.
So it's however you want to do that weekend. You can.
Charles Wright is actually moving their music outdoors this year. This is the first time. They've
really?
Only been in their General Motors Theater, which is a lovely space, but
mm-hmm.
I can never get a seat for that show. They're moving outdoors, and they've increased the number of our artists that they're presenting. So that Friday night, all the days are going to be great, but that Friday night in Midtown, Charles Wright, Scarab Club, and DIA will all be up and running.
Wow.
So you won't be able to avoid Concert of Colors.
Fantastic, fantastic. Give us contact information one more time.
Mm-hmm. The website is really your best source, and we're constantly updating it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you visit today and you don't see the information you're looking for, give us 24 to 48, and we'll have it on there. www.concertofcolors.com.
That's pretty straightforward.
Yes.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add about the museum, the education part of it, anything going on? Anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, in addition to music being a bridge or a way for people to learn about other cultures or unfamiliar
mm-hmm.
peoples, we found that food is another great bridge. We have a program called Yalla Eat. Yalla is a word in Arabic that you hear a lot at the museum. It means let's go, like
okay.
we're late for a meeting, yalla. Yalla Eat is let's go eat. A couple of years ago, we developed a series of guided walking tours of Warren Avenue, Eastern Market, which has a number of Arab vendors, and now we've developed a new one for Michigan Avenue. And so in the spring and fall, we offer these guided walking tours, but for the rest of the year we have a map, a free map you can get at the museum, the Yalla Eat map, and this shows you where all the Arabic markets and butchers and coffee and nut roasters, all the places that you want to go check out are on this map, and you can do it on your own. You can just use it as a self-guided tool. We find that these programs are very popular. They sell out. On the tour, you get so many samples. You really get filled up on that tour because you're going to be tasting a lot and seeing a lot. So that's something that's coming up again in September. That's the next round of tour of guided walking tours that we'll be doing on Michigan Avenue.
Okay, that'll be on the web?
That'll be on the web as
okay.
well. It's not there right now, but probably after Concert of Colors, we'll crank up the Yalla Eat machine again and
okay.
Get the word out.
Okay. As I always say, it's always all about the food.
Ha 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 ha.
Kim, thank you so much for being here today with Impact. This has been an amazing journey. And I have to go back and see all the things I missed last time I was there.
Come back. And thank you for the time. I really do appreciate the opportunity. And I appreciate WHFR so much as just a stalwart, as a pillar of our community. Really must support this station. Very important. I have a public radio background. I know the work it takes to keep the station on the air. So
31 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Congratulations.
Coming up is Daddy G, and that's a whole experiment in radio. But Kim, thank you again for being here with Impact, and thank you all for listening to Impact, the show about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. The views and opinions expressed on Impact are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. And this is WHFR Dearborn. Show.